Welcome to Knock On Podcast, where we bring you archery information and education that you can trust. Knock On was created as a way to bring all archers together, regardless of the brand you choose or the style of archery you shoot. Knock On Podcasting will deliver professional insights to the latest gear, proper shooting technique, along with high-level equipment setup and tuning. All right, everybody. Well, we're back. This is going to be part two of this two-part podcast, two-part series podcast. I've got Clint Freeman, the Royal Ninja of Aeroflight from Australia on the phone, world record holder, master of the 1400, the first ever to perfect the triple Lindy off a diving board.
that was stretching things.
Oh, man. Well, that's all the kind of nonsense we talk when we're rooming together anyway, so might as well keep it going. All right. Well, in the last podcast, we covered, setting up pretty much our whole setup to get to the point where now we're finally shooting an arrow out of the bow. So, and we talked about if you're having tears through paper and you can't change the tear, then obviously you've got some type of a contact issue. You talked about, you use a powder so that you can identify that. And so all that's critical. Once all that stuff's out of the way, now we're to the point where we're going to start actually shooting down range. So why don't you pick up from there, Clint, and tell me what you're looking for and what you do, because I'm sure now you're going to fine-tune knocking point and rest position.
Yeah.
So I'll just let you go at it.
So I've never really been one for doing a lot of paper testing. I've always found it frustrating, especially doing it at different yardages. So to achieve my perfect center shot, I will do what I call a walk back test. So I'll start at around about 20 meters. I've got a cross at the top of the target, and I'll aim until I'm hitting that cross. And then I'll start walking back, 5 meters at a time, shooting one arrow at each interval, and leaving my sight at 20 meters and still aiming at the cross. So then you'll get a fall pattern of where the arrows are laying. And if the arrows are slowly creeping out to the left, then I'll move my rest inside to the right. Or if it's creeping out to the right, I'll move it out away from the riser until I get that perfect line down the target. Normally I can get back to about maybe 40, 45 meters. And then that's how I achieve my center shot.
Yeah.
From there.
So ultimately you're doing what's called walk back tuning, or what I've said for several years, I've always called it the French tuning method.
Yeah.
You do it, you continually walk back. Typically I kind of cut out the middle part, and I take my bow, I sight it in perfectly at 3 feet or 3 yards, either way. And if you sight your bow in at about, inside of 3 yards, it's typically going to be your 40 to 50 yard pin to shoot. And I'm talking, you take a Sharpie marker, you put a marker on your bag, and shoot it level with yourself. Don't shoot like down on it if it's on the ground. But, you literally shoot level with yourself. You draw a little Sharpie marker spot the size of your arrow shaft, and you sight your bow in until you are shooting in that hole. And when you do that, then then you go to the distance. And without moving your sight, you make shots at, a spot. And like Clint said, a lot of people will hang a string down, I typically go to, I've got to the point now where I'll go and do it on a 70 meter butt. I know that my arrows are going to group at the bottom of that butt. However, I'm not worried about the fact that they're hitting low. I'm trying to identify what my arrows are naturally doing out of the bow without adjusting my sight. So like Clint said, if you've got a perfectly vertical line, and again, you've got to make sure you're on flat ground, you got to make sure, it's not windy out, and you got to make sure you're making good shots. I mean, if you make a 50-50 shot, then don't go down there and look at an arrow that's out to the right and think, well, okay, I need to move my rest now. I mean, you need to make good shots, weed out your bad ones. That's typically why I shoot a group. But yeah, if your group is to the right of the line, then you need to minimally move your rest to the left.
Yeah.
If your group is to the left, then you minimally move your rest to the right. Then you have to come back to your starting point, and you have to adjust your sight so that you're shooting in the same hole again. Because since you've moved your arrow rest, now you have to move your sight so that you're able to be perfectly sighted in again where you're shooting in that arrow hole. And then you more or less just repeat the steps again.
Yeah. That is exactly this. Yeah, pretty much the same method. So
okay, and then yeah. Where do you go from there?
Yeah, so from there, from that, we've set the center shot, and I will come back to around about 30 meters, and I'll do a best shaft test just to set the knocking point. So I've got my arrow weight, and I'll put some plumber's tape where the fletches would be, so I get the total shaft weight being the same.
Yeah, because you have to, you know, obviously any weight in the front or the back of an arrow affects how the arrow bends.
That's right.
So, yep. Not to mention just whether it's going to, you know, if you have a lighter arrow, it'll hit higher.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's right. So you have to make sure your total arrow weight is the same. A lot of, you know, I see a lot of people post pictures. They'll send me pictures and say, well, is this right? My bear shaft is hitting high. What should I do? It keeps hitting high. And then I look at the bear shaft and it's just got no fletchings on it.
Yeah.
You have to make sure, people, that your total arrow weight is the same as your arrow that has fletchings on it. So try to put either some electrical tape or plumber's tape or something in that same type of position. You know, you don't want a big thick wad so that it's something that's really contacting your arrow rest hard. You want to make sure it's kind of flat and perfectly smooth so that you're able to have your overall weight the same. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's right. So yeah, I'll set that shaft up. 30 meters, and just to get so that the bare shaft, I'm not particularly worried about if it's going left or right of the group of the fletch shafts. I'm just more worried about if the up and down. So I try and get that pretty much spot on as in height wise. So it's level pegging with the fletch shafts. And then from that point, and I'm not moving the knocking point on the bow. I'm moving, adjusting the rest to get that tune correct up and down.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, and then from that, I will go back to distance. More recently, 50 meters, because that's where everything is at. But before that, I would go back to 90 meters because it gave me a chance to actually...
because that's what makes or break your score. I mean, back then, that's what made or break you. If you threw down a turd 90-meter score, well, you're not even within contention. It's over.
Yeah. That's right. So, and the distance, because of the distance, it shows up your errors pretty quickly. And also because of the distance, you're able to see what the arrow was doing in the air a lot easier. So, and that was pretty much it. It may be from that point, just cleaning up the arrow flight with the adjustment of the blade angle. And that would be it. But if I'm adjusting the blade angle, I'm making sure that if I'm tilting it up or tilting it down, that I'm actually bringing the arrow back up to where it should be from the bare shaft test.
Yeah. So if for some reason you feel like maybe your blade angle is a little bit high and you're kind of, it looks like your arrow's still coming out a little bit high down the range, if you decide to lower your blade angle a little bit, then what you need to do before you actually lower that is, you know, get a bow square, clip it on your string, slide it down to where it's barely touching your launcher blade, and understand where exactly you need, where that knocking position is right then. Then once you lower the blade, you can actually micro adjust your rest back up to that exact position so that you're not actually having to retie everything. And that's... Yeah. For me, that's why that's what I've always loved about my trophy taker rests, is because that bolt that you loosen and tighten is big. So, you know, when you're moving that stuff a lot, you're not rounding it out like the old golden, you remember the old
keys
or whatever, they always would round out on you, and then you're screwed, you know. So I like a solid aluminum rest with micro adjustment, because it's critical to be able to just barely turn it, move it half a mil one way or another. I mean, that's critical. So, you know, once you've kind of done that, I mean, for the most part, you're, you know, like you said, you don't like, sometimes paper tuning can be frustrating because it is, you know, an arrow can do a lot of things coming out of the bow. And, you know, that's the one thing I hated when I had my archery shop. You know, it was such a pain in the butt when a customer's like, well, I want to see it shoot a bullet hole. Because, you know, I would shoot it at 20 yards and it's wadding up arrows. And, you know, if they're trying to shoot a really big fletching or something, you know, it might not come out of the bow perfectly clean.
Yeah.
So for me, paper is a starting point, and I do start with it, but it's not my ending point.
No.
My ending point is my arrow flight, and also obviously where I'm grouping in the target, you know, 100%. Well, what else you got going on down there, Clint? We've kind of talked through the arrow flight. I think we've got people pretty straightened out. We got them, gave them something to work on. Well, I guess the one thing we didn't cover was, you know, I had talked about the importance of fletching choice and offset or helical, because I get asked that a lot too. How much helical should I put on? Personally, I found that an offset, a very slight offset, is actually more accurate for our target bows at these longer distances than a true helical or a hard offset. Or do you agree?
Yeah, well, up until maybe probably a year ago, I was doing just a very slight offset, but we have a guy down here which you may know, Jim Park. I think he organized for you to come across, and he is just an absolute mathematician wizard.
Yeah, that's a great segue, because actually the next podcast is with James.
Yeah. he is just really brilliant, has done a lot of work with aerodynamics and spin rates and all that with arrows. So just more recently with using Jim's instruction, I've put maybe about somewhere between 2 to 3 degree on the fletch. So
I run about 2. It's not, I mean, it's minimal to some. Now, another thing too is obviously you're at a short, you know, you're focusing on a shorter distance now too. Now that 50 meters is the game, now we're back to 3D distances, and I shot a pretty strong offset or a pretty good little, you know, a good little helical on a short fletch, because obviously having a higher spin rate at the shorter distance, you know, the arrow isn't losing its speed yet. You know, it hasn't got to that point. So, I mean, that's actually, I'll make sure, I'm going to go ahead and dive into a lot of that with James then, because if he's got some new stuff that he hasn't shared with me, that'll be interesting for me to hear too, because, yeah, he's the untold genius, isn't he?
He is, yeah. I mean, he's done a lot of work with Easton, and they're actually taking on board what he has to say. That's how good this guy is. So.
Well, yeah, because when James and I first started talking, and I could be wrong. I mean, I know there's other people out there that have good information, but maybe you've talked with James about myself, but when I first started talking with James, he was very interested in things that I had found and things that I understood. Which I think is a big part why he invited me down there, because I stayed with James and we talked through a lot of these things, And actually, when I came back, I remember putting him in front of, well, obviously I scooped him up for Matthews when I was there, but then when I left, I made sure to bring him over to Hoyt too. And then I introduced him to Tekmachov, and I told him, I said, George, you need to listen to James. And that's probably who's playing a pretty big part in making sure that information's getting relayed in to Issa now. So that's going to be exciting. That's going to be great for the listeners to hear that. But, you know, let's kind of break the mold here a little bit. And maybe since I know we'll be able to get in depth with that topic when I talk with James, let's talk through some stories. We might as well talk just kind of off record about some fun that we've had, or even stuff that we've done personally. So earlier you said that you had shot some awesome scores, but they weren't star fitas, so they never counted.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's just talk. What's the best score you've chucked down? Where it, you know, it wasn't a star fita, so it really didn't count, but it was legit.
Yeah, we have over here in Australia, we have what we call a QRE, which is a qualifying ranking event. And these are used for setting scores or achieving scores to get onto national teams or national squads. And this is going back, maybe 2009, 2010 probably. We had a QRE, and I was shooting pretty well in practice, and I went up and had I think it was a 14-18. I think that was my PB, definitely like for a tournament sort of event. And yeah, it was just absolutely smoking that day. And I actually came off feeling disappointed because I shot a 350 at 90 meters that day, but it was so close to being a 357.
Holy crap.
Yeah, I had seven arrows that were less than 2 to 3 mil outside of the 10 ring. It was just game on that day. Every shot that was either just missed the 10 ring was just missing the 10 ring. It was just a picture perfect day. The conditions were right, no wind. Temperature wise was about 22 degrees. It was just beautiful. And that was, and then I backed it up the second day, I think, it was a little bit windier, but a 14.03 on the second day. So that was probably the best, definitely the best double feeder I've put down. But that was the best single feeder round I've had so far.
Well, what's the best full fita you've thrown down, like at personal practice? Did you ever shoot a full fita personal practice?
Yeah, for me, I always practiced the rounds that I was going to be competing. So, and quite honestly, it would have been an odd thing for me not to shoot a full fita around at least once a week. My personal best was actually not much higher. It's 14.20 on the nose. But one thing I'm sort of happy or proud to have is that most of my personal best scores are actually achieved in competition, because I always try and treat my practice rounds exactly the same as competition, and my competition rounds exactly the same as practice. So I know there's guys out there who have shot, you know, 14.27, 14.30 even, but that, you know, they haven't cracked 14.10 in competition. So,
hey, that's me. So I think I might have said this before, but the best actual fita I've ever thrown down or the, you know, the best full FIDA score where I actually kept score on myself was actually behind, it was at Easton. The very first day that I flew out there, and they built me, the engineers built me a couple bows to try. And I still have the bow here. What's funny about this, Clint, because this is like a perfect example of placebo. So the one bow that they set up that wasn't, no one was shooting it then, and it was kind of, it was pretty outside of the box. And actually now, this bow that I'm talking about is very similar to what Steve Anderson, the producer Big Show, from it's kind of this, it's, I guarantee you it's almost identical to the geometry of what he's shooting, that bow that he's made, because obviously I'm bigger. I've got a, over a 31 inch draw. I'm 6'5". So, I've always liked to have a little bit more bow in my hand. And, so they built me a Pro Elite with 3500s in spirals.
Wow.
Yeah. Had like an 8.5 or 9 inch brace height on it. I mean, it was crazy, but I have the targets here because I shot, I'll have to look. I know my total score was a 1428. That's the highest I've ever shot in a practice.
That's smoking.
Yeah, it was ripping. It was, it was ridiculous. I think I shot 354 at 90. I'd have to get the thing out. I think I shot a 354. Then I shot a 356, and then I just I lit up the 50 meter. It was ridiculous, and then I cleaned 30. Yeah. But yeah, that was the highest score I'd ever shot, and I went, I literally just said, well, the bow shoots, so now I got to go think about what I want to do, because obviously at the time I was trying to decide what company I wanted to go with. And what's funny is I never shot that bow in competition.
Yeah.
I like got home, and then once I started shooting it, I realized it was a little slow. And then it was like, well, if there's some wind, you know, when I started to shoot it in some wind with the slower arrow, I started to have some issues with drift, you know. So yeah. I never shot that bow other than that, but it that bow was the deal sealer for me to, you know, to go with Hoyt. But you know, we've shot some great field rounds together.
Absolutely. I think my last world field, which was that Sweden?
Yeah,
I think.
It was in Sweden. Yep.
Yeah. That was, yeah, just,
is that your last one? I feel bad about that now, dude.
No, no.
I beat you.
That's the way the cookie crumbles, isn't it? You
know? I eliminated the Grandmaster Ninja in his last ever world field.
That's it. that's the way it goes.
Dang, dude, I feel really bad now. No, you know what though?
Months to come, you know. So
that tournament. So that was. I had actually resigned from Matthews a month and a half before that.
Yeah.
And even though I didn't work for Matthews, I felt like I owed it to everybody in the industry to act like a pro. And I feel this way now. I feel this way with all pros. And there's a few that honor this, and there's a lot that don't. But, you know, I had had my differences. I decided to leave the company, go out on my own, do the things that I'm doing now. And I told them that I would shoot the bows until the end of the year, even though I was no longer with the company. I no longer had a contract. You know, they even said, you know, because at the time I was an employee, so things were a little bit more complicated. I didn't just have a shooter contract. So, I knew that that was going to be my last tournament with the Matthews, guaranteed. I knew for sure it would be my last tournament, and I was dealing with some demons. You know, I think as shooters, and that's a pretty valuable lesson. You know, there's going to be times where we make changes, and there's going to be times where maybe we shoot with different teammates, or we have to deal with that stuff. And, you know, we have to, you have to be able to get your head past that. So I think for me, that tournament was a rough start because I didn't have all my head together. And, you know, I squeaked through the first round, you know, I kind of squeaked through and got into the eliminations. And then obviously, I think we shot the quarterfinals, didn't we? And you and I were tied.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Then went for a 1 hour shoot off where you, where you knocked me out.
Yeah, that was the longest shoot off ever. Like I got pictures from that shoot off because it wasn't like as simple to get someone out back then. It wasn't like, okay, you've shot three arrows, it's close to the center, we're getting this crap dealt with. Like back then it was like, okay, this is like shoot to the death. But I've got pictures of the crowd, like like you can see like Tom Dillon after like our 20th arrow, he's like got this look on his face behind us, like, come on already. This is getting this is getting old, these two shooting golds, you know. So but yeah, for me, you know, I remember that moment very well because I remember telling myself, you know, you're controlling your own destiny right now. This is going to be the last time that you ever shoot a tournament with this bow in your hand. So do you want to do it with a medal or do you not want to? And I remember on that when we had to start going, you know, kind of one arrow shoot offs, I remember sitting there. That's when I finally snapped out of my little thing that I was dealing with and thought, okay, you need to buckle your freaking pants up here because you're getting ready to have your last tournament, you know, not good. So
yeah,
we shot really good. And I remember I was really emotional for me when I got, you know, I can't remember what happened, but I remember when I finally had the arrow that won it, I remember my excitement. Then I remember looking over at you and realizing that it was you that I was shooting against. And I kind of felt bad because I was like, you know, I'm just a huge supporter of sportsmanship. And sometimes these guys in these matches, they get, you know, so overpowered that I think it comes off a little bit offensive to the people that they're shooting with. And I didn't do any like hooping and yelling or anything, but I know that.
No, you weren't doing cartwheels or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know that I kind of clenched up a big fist and closed my eyes and I knew how, I mean, I knew what it meant. And then I remember when I opened my eyes, you were there and I thought, you know, I remember saying, sorry, dude. And, you know, you said the same thing you say now. That was always the hard thing with us, man. Back then, we had the coolest, the most united group. I mean, me, you, Sitar, Chris White. I mean, you know, Cousins was always fun to be with us. Balders was always there. You know, we always made fun of Morgan. He could never talk English unless he swore or said or said 10.
That's it.
I mean, but every single time we met, one of us had to go out, you know, and we all knew that our games were flawless. I mean, we shot clean all the time. And so that was a super cool event. And then, you know, right here behind me, I've actually got from, you know, the best ever field round I ever shot was with you. In Australia.
That's right, the clean round you shot.
It wasn't just it was the clean marked, but it was also because that was the first time it had ever been done in Australia.
Yeah,
but it was also my X count was crazy. I mean, it's still the highest X count that I know of on a marked field. But yeah, that was so fun too because I had. Well, James Park was on the target behind us, so he got to come up and see it. You were there. Pat Coughlin was there. Clifton was there. So, I mean, you know, all these people are just for me, these are the people, you know, and we're leaving a lot of guys out, you know, but obviously since you and I are talking, you know, we're talking about the crew that for years we were all together in a different country at a different time. And, yeah, you know, and we were always a couple rooms down from one another. We knew going into the tournament that it was going to be, if you weren't clean, then you were coming home, you know. And all those guys are, you know, they're still so important to archery. And, you know, like Pat, you know, Pat obviously, you know, started Pat's Archery down there in Australia. There's a ton of great shops. You know, I don't want to single out Pat. There's, you know, the Abbey Archery's Grant is awesome. You know, he's got a great pro staff down there. And obviously Marcus down at Urban Archery. And, you know, we've got Benson. And, you know, there's a lot. So I don't want to, you know, if I didn't say your name right now, you know, don't take it personal. But, you know, for me, like, those are the people that, and that's, those are the people that I want on this show. Some people might not even, you know, there's going to be hunters that are listening to this right now that do not know Clint Freeman. But I'm going to tell every one of you guys, this guy has done a ton for archery, because when he develops these things and when he shoots the first ever 1400, I mean, he literally set the benchmark. He set the standard and achieved something that no one thought was possible in archery. And from there, the bar gets raised. People see that that is now reachable. So people start to make changes and advancements to reach it. I mean, you did that, dude, with like equipment that people would laugh at if they saw it at a garage sale right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if people saw your setup when you shot a 1400 in a garage sale right now, they'd be like, look at this piece of crap for 20 bucks.
Absolutely. You know, we were shooting bows, you know, round wheel bows, you know, bows doing 240 feet per second. You know, it wasn't super fast. You know, it was just, but, you know, we got it done. So, but what was the, you know, I think, especially with the 1400, I think the thing I'm even more proud of is, like, is we were lucky in Australia that we had the first opportunity to have a crack. When the world records came out, because it was summertime in January.
Yep.
And so I set the record in April of 98, but it took it took 18 months before the second 1400 was shot, which means, you know, everybody had their chance, but they couldn't do it in the first
summer that it was available.
Yep. And what turned out, even after 98, I had a break for 18 months to shoot recurve with the Australian Institute of Sport to train for the 2000 Olympics, and I didn't make the team, ended up getting chicken pox. So straight after that, I went straight back to compound, and my first tournament back at the Nationals, you know, after 18 months, 2 years out, I shot a 1402, which at the time was only the third time 1400 had been shot at that time. So it was, yeah, it's a great feeling, and it's even better feeling knowing that you're setting benchmarks for others to chase. And when that gets beaten, you know, it's fuel. Yeah, you know, and it makes you get off your ass and actually get out there and try and knock over another benchmark, you know. So, like, at the moment, the world record is, what, 1419, I believe. So no one's actually cracked that 1420 mark in a registered tournament. So that's the mark, yeah.
Yeah, and it's getting hard to find one to do it now. That's the thing, too. You know, now that everything's moved to 50, it's gotten harder.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, although we're talking target right now, you know, shooting the 1400 and then having national teams and Olympic teams realize that those numbers are possible, then there becomes the direct need for a company like Easton to come out with a shaft that is more aerodynamic, more So then all these shafts start to come out, and then that same technology trickles all the way down into the hunting realm, where all of a sudden now we got an ACC arrow. Now, in hunting, we've got the Easton Injection AC. Well, that arrow is so close to, like, it's very close to an original ACE that, that really is kind of the arrows that first started really cracking out those numbers as well. So, all these things that these archers have done, these are things that were fundamental to archery. They might not be, I'm never going to be a guy, well, I shouldn't say never, because I do have friends that I guess are kind of more celebrity type status, but for me, those aren't really the people that I look for. Obviously, there's some pretty cool famous people out there that are archers, and if they're diehard archers, hey dude, I'll talk to you, call me, send me an email, let's, if you're loving archery and need help, give me a ring. But for the most part, the people that I think are valuable to this sports are the guys like you. And man, although we've been friends for a long time, I just want to tell the whole world right now, thanks, Clint, for everything you've done for archery. I know that you love it. You've done it such a long time. You've dedicated your life to it. You've got a family down there. Everybody in Archery Australia values, you like the world. And I do too. You've been a great friend and a great competitor. And, I can't thank you enough for everything that you've done for archery, for sure.
No, let's, thank you, John. I mean, it's great with what you're doing, because, it's all about educating the archery public and making the sport better in many ways. So I think what you're doing and trying to educate everyone is a really good thing. So yeah, congrats to you.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, hey, we've been chatting here for, I guess, about an hour and a half. We've got two great podcasts, I think. And, hey, dude, we'll definitely catch up again. I plan to come down there again very soon. So I'm going to make sure that I let you know. I want to hunt some stuff.
Okay.
I might show up and shoot some target just for old time's sakes. I'm not shooting enough right now, so dude, we can have our world field rematch. You can stomp me out, and then we can, then next time me and you talk on here, I can say, hey, the last time we shot together, you beat me. That would be, we'll trade hands. So thanks so much, Clint. I gotta head out. Sharon's upstairs. She's texting me saying my breakfast is ready. So I'm going to go chow down, but, thanks everybody for listening. Make sure you, look up Clint Freeman on Facebook, and, you can Google him. He's a great guy. He's got some good reads that you could purchase too. So, thanks, Clint, so much. And make sure you let me know if you need anything from Knock On, buddy. I appreciate it.
No worries. Shoot well, everyone.
Be sure to visit knockonarchery.com to see our entire line of trendy knock-on lifestyle clothing. knockonarchery.com